politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for our life, our liberty, and our property. Yet again, just like it's 1776 all over again, or perhaps it's more like 1860, or perhaps it's like nothing we've faced before. You know, it's interesting, and by the way, it is Thursday, the 11th of April. It's interesting how there's this explosive new movie that's coming out this week. Maybe it came out already. People are talking about it. I'm seeing, I don't plan on watching it because I just don't watch degenerate Hollywood types. And it's full of that. But there's this movie, Civil War. That's what it's titled. And sort of narrating, simulating what a modern day Civil War is. You got the Florida Alliance, Western forces trying to fight American president who's in his third term and uses the military to bomb his own people, and what a real civil war would look like if we had a second American Civil War. And I'm seeing a lot of chatter about it, that how poignant it is given the sentiment of our time that it's as if we're on the brink of civil war. But here's the irony. I wish we were. Not that I wish for bloodshed in a war. We certainly don't want that. But I wish we had a mindset that we are willing to fight the left, not like in a social media memeing way, but to actually defend and advance our policies as strongly as they advance theirs. What people don't understand who think that we're headed for a civil war is that you need something with which to have a war. So in the first Civil War, you had a scenario where the reason why you had a Confederacy is because the governments, local and state, of the southern states were homogeneously aligned with the people, and the people were aligned with them. So you had the power of a state institution to then raise an army and then get together as a unit of states and to have a war. The problem is, we don't have red states. Now, we're going to have Andy Roth on of the State Freedom Caucus Network, again, who's the most successful raw materials we have to work with this, and we're gaining traction here and there, but we don't yet have that. And that's why we need to focus on the State Freedom Caucus. You know, we need to focus on getting more DeSantis's rather than running them out of our movement and rather than being distracted. But right now, if all we're going to do is be distracted up the rear end of one man, or just grifting on social media, we don't have that. We can't even get a scenario where the institutions of red states are mildly, at a political policy level, trying to preserve our values and interpose against the feds, much less, you know, actually raise forces and have a state guard and sheriff's posse is where we do what we need to be doing. It's so weird. People feel like they need a team. Everyone needs a team. Because it's too hard to look out at the political landscape and say, we're screwed. We don't have a horse. So you have to lie to yourself and lie to other people and project upon where it doesn't exist, your values. Because it takes so much effort and brain cells to actually create a movement that doesn't exist than to simply deem it upon something that does exist but doesn't share your values. But we do ourselves no favors. The red states will fight. We'll have a civil war. Well, we could build up to that point, but frankly, if we did, as I've always said, if red states would do what they're supposed to be doing, it would check the power of the bad guys. And, you know, we'd split the baby somewhere in the middle, have more state autonomy, and the left wouldn't be as crazy because there would be, you know, they'd just be exposed more. But we don't have that. Let me give you a perfect illustration of this. And then I want to get to just some of the news of the day with the FISA reauthorization in Congress, and then we'll switch back to the state issues with Andy Roth. But this is from the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. They put out a press release that basically they found in Laramie, Wyoming, the Wyoming Department of Health was listed as a sponsor of a Western-themed drag event. It's described on promotional materials as R-rated and promises boozed-up cowfolk, encouraging discretion when bringing minor kids. And it's actually promoted through the Department of Health with a batch of funding through the Communicable Disease Unit. So all the, like, the COVID funding they're using to promote drag shows. Now, since the Freedom Caucus exposes, and again, this is the importance of the work that they're doing and why before they existed, we had no institution. You know, depending on the state, you had one or two loose members that would yelp here and there about an issue. But here we have an organized institution to expose this and do it in a substantive way. But the point is that until we get better at this, you have Wyoming. Okay, you know, in this movie, I just watched the trailer. They have something called the Western Forces. Well, if you ever had a civil war nowadays, what would be the state that would be most likely to lead it? I mean, you know, if you look at presidential election results over the last few presidential elections, Wyoming has voted by the greatest margin for the Republican nominee. Yet, the Wyoming Department of Health, they were listed at the bottom of this, like, flyer. I'm looking at an image right now sent to me by a friend of mine there in Wyoming, one of our teammates, our ConAction team members there. Wyoming AIDS Assistance so it's the AIDS Assistance Program. I'm not kidding you. This is not a parody. Presents Laramie Drag Queen Bingo, and featuring the Stilettos. And it has several organizations there that are sponsoring it. And there's a logo on the bottom right that says Wyoming Department of Health. Since then, it's been removed from their website because they exposed it. But folks, this is what we have. Because we have leftist governors in almost every Republican state, even the ones that aren't full-born leftists, but they're duplicitous. So, you know, they'll play a double game where they'll talk a little better, but they'll do nothing to flush the agencies and departments. So the state governments, I mean, this is what you would have a civil war with, right? These departments, the departments of health and education in places like Idaho and Wyoming, are just as demonic as those in New York and California. So with what are you going to create a civil war? And again, not that I'm pining for a civil war. I'm when I say a civil war, I mean more like a political one. But we can't even, you know, just erase from red states the most demonic policies of blue states. We don't have a civil war. A civil war needs leaders. And the leaders of the right are too busy earning money, memeing, and grifting off of Mar-a-Lago. You know, a classic example of how we could have a de facto political civil war, but we don't. There's now this growing pressure among the top, you know, so-called, you know, right-leaning influencers for Nebraska, which ended its legislative session, to hold a special session. Now, you might think, wow, man, Daniel, they're taking up your call to hold special sessions, highlighting issues, the FBI persecution of political opponents, to essentially rid the state of illegal aliens. Medical freedom. No. It's to award the Electoral College winner take all so Biden can't get the Omaha-based district. And again, I'm not opposed to that. You know, you have control, go do it. Get an extra electoral, you know, point there. I'm fine with that. But why is that the only time we find ourselves with the ability to harness a movement and focus on a specific strategic outcome? Again, because that's where we have a movement. We have a movement behind guns. We have a movement behind school choice. We have a movement, or had a movement until recently, on abortion. And we have a movement behind Trump as a person. That's where we have a movement. So the results show. Within the Republican Party, you get a lot of results on guns and school choice and support of Trump. Okay, I mean, that's what you get what you fight for. But we don't fight for anything else, so you don't get it. So I don't want to hear a civil war. You ain't getting any of that. But anyway, I want to turn to some national issues for our next segment before we come back to the State Freedom Caucuses. Today's sponsor is Birch Gold. Folks, look, if you would have listened to me a year ago and texted Daniel to 989898, so Birch helps convert your IRA, 401k, or roll over an existing one, create a new one, putting it into gold rather than the stock market, you would be, from a year ago, you would have been up 17%. We're now on a huge rally. Obviously, as we talked about the last couple of days, even the government data can no longer hide the fact that not only has inflation never gone down after record heights, which you would expect, but it's going up a lot every month, month over month, year over year. And this is the only way to hedge against inflation in a meaningful way, by diversifying at least a portion of your savings with gold, with Birch Gold. They have different options. So you text 989898 and get your free info kit on gold. Then talk to one of their precious metals specialists. They're very smart people, and they will walk you through the process like they did it with me. Again, text Daniel to 989898 to protect your savings today. So, you know, let's just move over to abortion. Trump was yesterday in an interview was talking down the Florida ballot, the ability of us to defeat the Democrat ballot initiative there. It's one of many states that they're going to put a right to an abortion to codify in the state's constitution. And he says, now the states are putting out what they want. It's the will of the people. So Florida's probably going to change. Now, there's a new Emerson poll out that has it getting 57%. But remember, in Florida, you need 60, not 50. So if we just rallied the troops, we should be able to ward it off. The way you win the abortion issue, I've said this many times, you can't view politics in a vacuum. Well, this issue is a 60% issue. This issue is a 40%. It's the full package of what your party and your slate of candidates are standing for, both on the issues, their image as a person, and that's how voters judge them. So if you're leading on accomplishing quality of life issues like DeSantis is doing one after another every day, we're not even covering this. Like, you know, he's going after sex offenders today, yesterday, the porch piracy and theft and you know, toll relief, one after another, the issues people care about economically, security, safety, security, prosperity. And then, so you don't publicly retreat on abortion. What you do when you feel you're losing it, you don't lead with it, you lead with other issues. And then when you do, you warn people, you accentuate the radicalism of the other side. So for example, this poll showed that the majority of people felt that the 6-week abortion ban was too much. It goes too far. Now, a poll like that doesn't measure the intensity of how you vote. It's more like, do you feel it goes too far? Yeah, it goes too far. Okay? But then you inform people, well, if these amendments pass, it will codify it right up until the day of birth. See, that's how you win it back. But instead, Trump just publicly is like, look, this is what the people want. We're losing. I just, the people, you know, they want it. It's probably going to pass. When it's not true. Why are you doing that? I don't understand how that's acceptable. But moreover, the Florida experience is a refutation to Trump's entire worldview. Because the same poll that says that 57% believe the 6-week ban is too strict, it's the Emerson poll, shows Trump leading Biden in Florida by 13 points, which is unbelievable for a federal presidential race. You know, remember, you know, last time Trump won Florida by 2 points, I want to say. Something like that. 13 points. So how do you square the two? Why is it that Republicans are losing the abortion issue everywhere, and often it's bleeding over that, among other things, to just the, you know, electoral potential, and Republican candidates are losing special elections. But yet in Florida, Trump's up 13 points. But then the same poll says that, you know, they felt the abortion issue went too far. That's the DeSantis effect. Because they like what they see from the party there, which is defined by him. So they're going to award all the Republicans there. I've said this over and over again. You poll voters in Palm Beach County. Do you support a heartbeat bill? Strong majority will say they don't. But a majority of Palm Beach voters voted for DeSantis for the first time ever. Voted for the Republican. So Trump himself is a refutation to it. He trashes our issue. He has a horrible public image. You're not accomplishing anything on any issue. So then, yeah, the left is very mobilized on the abortion issue. You strip everything away. You're left with just that. It's a liability. But it's a self-fulfilling proposition. It's only a liability because of you. If you learn more from DeSantis and accomplished more on other issues, had a little bit more of a cleaner public image, didn't sound like a first grader and an idiot, you'll punch through it. Destroying our issues. By the way, it's vintage Trump to elevate Lindsey Graham for years and then only go after him from the left on abortion. It was the funniest thing. Now he's attacking him because Lindsey is, ironically, being good on abortion. He finds the one way to get to Lindsey Graham's left. Hey, maybe on the flip side, the good news is maybe he won't endorse him anymore in 2026 for his reelect when we challenge him. Who knows? And one other thing on the abortion thing, I just want to point out. So the lead social liberal within the party is Carrie Lake. I told you her top advisors are Log Cabin Republican. She's a big Log Cabin Republican, big supporter of the homosexual agenda, now big supporter of abortion. And she always was, let's face it, it was always an act. She's a lifelong Democrat, and yeah, you know, that's fine. Some people do switch, but clearly that switch has not been clean. I just want to give you another vivid illustration of how it doesn't have to be this way and how the fake MAGA movement is elevating subversive people that embody the very sort of McCain-Romney mentality that we tried to get rid of, but they have this certain, like, persona of fighting just in their rhetoric, their rote, aimless rhetoric, but not on the issues that actually matter in the way they matter at the time they matter. I don't know if I told you this, but keep in mind, she's not the only candidate there. You know who else is running? Sheriff Mark Lamb. And I've known him for years, long before this was ever a thing, before Carrie Lake was a thing. We had him on the show for years talking about the border. He's the epitome of someone who's grounded in principles. He's obviously the father of this sheriff's posse idea, which is so important. Interposing, he took a strong stance during COVID, saying, "I refuse to enforce any COVID order." And strong social conservative. And a much cleaner image to the public. Remember, Carrie Lake's going to have a very hard time winning. Oh, but she has all the swamp rhino senators endorsed her. I saw an article recently. Sheriff Mark Lamb has not a single Senate endorsement. Yeah, of course, because he's the real insurgency candidate. But sadly, he likely doesn't stand a chance. By the way, just for the record, Carrie Lake told him to run. Just so you know, Carrie Lake believed her own delusion and thought she was really governor. So she called him up and said, "Hey, Mark, you should run for Senate." And he took the cue and did. Then when it dawned on Carrie Lake a few months later, oh, actually, you know, I'm not governor and I need a platform from which to grift. So she calls him up. Actually, she called the gay Republican, Rick Grinnell. They're very close. She's close with every gay Republican to pressure Mark Lamb. And to get out of the race. But whatever, be it as it may, I'm just telling you, this whole night, well, Daniel, it's either the MAGA or the Democrat. No, no, actually, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Actually, we often do have choices, but the Trump movement basically did to the hard right what the Chamber of Commerce Republicans could never do. And get them to stand down and even be happy, okay, and not just okay, but in some cases, champion, exalt, elevate, and even worship their demise. The candidates that embody, again, you put the flavoring on it, you know, candidates that will joust with the media and at a press conference will call out the media. But when you strip it down to the actual issues that matter and the way they matter at the time they matter, they're ironically, they have the same loser mentality as the old Romney, McCain, Bush, Dole Republicans. Nothing has changed. Well, a lot has changed because now we're okay with it. And speaking of the devil, one more thing. So we have the FISA reauthorization. Unbelievable. The one issue that is so vital, you're dealing with the FBI without a warrant. We now know, proven, the FBI Inspector General Michael Horowitz, no relation, by the way, his report that they've been abusing it, monitoring Americans, monitoring people that were at the Capitol on January 6th who never did anything wrong. It's unreal. Obviously, spied on Trump's campaign. So you might have seen yesterday 19 Republicans voted down the rule. But from what I'm hearing as of this minute, now that could change. We're going to have Congressman Warren Davidson on tomorrow to see what's doing with that. Johnson appears pretty confident he's going to get it passed without any of the reforms we want. And what appears right now is that the game he is playing is that he did an Overton window shift. He started out with giving them a blank check for 5 years. Now he's going down to, okay, we'll do it with no reforms, but a 2-year reauthorization. Now, again, if this were really about, we don't have enough power, why would you do 2 years? Do a 1-year reauthorization if you think Trump's going to win. Then again, it's not about that because you actually have bipartisan support. Ironically, it's the only issue. You have the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee that supports warrants. And I think also some of them also do support Davidson's amendment on fully banning the FBI from purchasing the data from private vendors if they would otherwise need a warrant if they were accessing it without a third party. So this notion that they are compelled to pass this is absurd. Johnson's like, we cannot allow 702 to expire. This is his modus operandi. We took this business of, we can't allow a government shutdown. We can't allow this. So you telegraph to the Democrats that you are terrified of not forging a deal. So then you get nothing. So Johnson just took that with the support of Trump and MAGA and took it to the next level. Now, you might be thinking, Daniel, didn't Trump just put out a piece actually opposing reauthorization? So how is Johnson so confident that he's going to pass this? Meaning, wouldn't that mean that if Johnson would violate, make an end run around rules and, suspend the rules, use Democrat support, wouldn't that mean he loses his speakership? Well, you'd think, but you'd only lose your speakership if Trump supports you losing your speakership. Let's just say, and we'll put this on a shelf till tomorrow because it's just very fluid. Let's just say my initial intuition about Trump's post was correct, that it was just, kind of a throwaway posturing. But privately, he basically winked and nodded to Johnson, just give me something that I could say it's fine and we'll wait until I'm president and I'll take care of it as president type of thing. Let's just say, yeah, that there's never forget, Johnson does not do anything on a major issue, especially something that is the top issue in MAGA world of the, you know, FBI weaponization, particularly the program that was utilized to spy on the Trump campaign itself, you don't do that without his blessing. There's no middle ground. So if he's silent, it means he actually supports it. In this case, even if he had one, 2 in the morning, one sentence post on it, it's posturing. I mean, I wish this weren't the case. I so badly wish we could utilize his 100% dominion over conservative media, conservative organizations, and the Republican Party for the good. I wish we could. It would be very easy because, you know, it's all centralized in one man. So you just influence one man, you influence the party. But sadly, he's not what people make him out to be. I wish that weren't the case. But what do you want from me? So that's why we can't put our hopes in this. And that leads me to our next guest. So folks, if I had one message for any fervent Republican voter, conservative, every person I bump into at Bible study or services, oh man, Daniel, what's going to be? What's going to be? Do you think Trump's going to win? It would be this. We don't live in a time warp where the world gets, you know, time gets frozen from now until November 5th and then frozen again from November 5th till the next November, where everything is the next, you know, presidential general election. You know, there's a lot that goes on between now and then. There's the down the ballot primaries. There's the legislative sessions, even when they're not in session. We're going to talk about with our guests coming up, like we just mentioned with the Wyoming Freedom Caucus and the Department of Health sponsoring a drag show. There's oversight. There's stuff we can do. There's pressure we could exert within our own dominion, our own sphere of influence. But moreover, here's the reality. I've already explained in great detail that even if you had DeSantis times 10 as president, we would need to be fighting back in the states. Certainly the fact that we don't have that by a mile. And then, you know, again, it's at least a 50% proposition that Biden wins a re-election. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, we're going to die. We're going to die. Well, it is what it is. You know, it's largely out of our control. Obviously, this you know, mail-in ballot juggernaut that they have built is going to be very hard for anyone to get around. There are image problems with the Republican Party. It's not simple, okay? So, I mean, putting everything else aside, it is a very strong likelihood. And in fact, if the election were held today, literally this day, it's pretty clear. You take the Rasmussen poll out, which is ridiculous, that RCP puts in there, Biden would likely win. And that's despite the Hur report and everything we saw about him being, you know, having dementia. He took a little bit of a hit, but then survived it. You know, it could go up and down, could lose. But the point is, we don't need to sit back and be a victim to whatever happens then. We could build right now an edifice for liberty, for prosperity, pretty much everything except for foreign policy in a number of states. But, you know, you can't be lazy. It takes work. You got to focus. You got to get organized. You got to join one of our con action teams. You got to, you know, get involved. Like I said, these are the most important legislative primaries of our lifetime. Okay. I do not believe it's the most important general election. I believe it's at probably one of the least important ones for a number of reasons. It's definitely the most important legislative primaries. A lot of them begin in June. Okay. This is our work. And you can't lie to yourself and think you have a movement when you don't. Think, oh, it just, yeah, you know, I just press a button here and no, it's not going to work like that. But here's the good news. It's not like we have to create something out of whole cloth. We already have proof of concept. And that is the State Freedom Caucus Network. We already have an institution that's not, I don't want to call it an organization because it's really more like a new movement and a party that's very strategically oriented towards outcomes. There's an issue. Well, where do we have control? The states. What's the way to do it? Here's a law change. Here are the members. Let's get them organized, expose it, fight, pass it. They want to block it. We defeat them in a primary. Boom. That's all we can do. It strips away all the nonsense. All we need is to grow their ranks, get them in more states, get them more power in the states they're in, organize better behind a list of legislation on, you know, the currency stuff we're working on, the medical freedom, interposing against federal tyranny, getting rid of illegal immigration in the red states. So whatever Biden has prepared, which obviously if he wins a second term, I mean, it's going to be the Fourth Reich. But, you know, in half the states, we could fight that. And in fact, we'll be forced to focus on this. So why not do it now? So I wanted to give a broad overview of where the state freedom caucuses are now, where they're headed. So we're going to the top today with Andy Roth, who's the president of the State Freedom Caucus Network. By the way, make sure to follow him at Andy Roth on Twitter. Go to statefreedomcaucus.org to check out the members by state if you're in one of their states and how to get involved. And of course, he is with us today. Hey, Andy, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Always a pleasure, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I want to look back retrospectively. I am in awe of you guys. I really am, as you well know, because for a very specific reason. I look at your members and I look at the Twitter feeds of your state or chapters and individual members. And I know this sounds very novel, but I see no drama, no memes, no distractions, no personalities, just point and shoot. There's a problem. There's an issue. Here it is. Here's what we're doing. Sometimes we have the votes. Sometimes we don't. But when we don't, we're building towards the future. How the hell did you get that done?
Well, I'm actually kind of upset that we didn't do it earlier, because in hindsight, it seems like something we should have done a long time ago. And because all the pieces are there. We have 11 state freedom caucuses, and they're comprised of 165 state lawmakers. And these folks just needed help. And they've probably been shouting in the wind for years and years and years, but nothing was ever done about it. But because the House Freedom Caucus in D.C. was created, we now had a brand and a vision on which to piggyback off of. So a couple of years ago, we started talking with state lawmakers and we started talking with the House Freedom Caucus, and we were like, let's do this. And it is slow. I mean, I wish we could be in all 50 states right now, but we started with Georgia and then South Carolina, on and on. And then the most recent one is Missouri. And our hope is that we can get into a few more states before the end of the year, and then ultimately all 50. But it is going to take some time.
Could you share any of those states kind of where you're looking, or is that still top secret?
It's a little bit top secret. You know, the thing is that things can fall apart. You know, you get the state lawmakers together, but then maybe one or two of them loses their primary. We need a state director in all of our states, and sometimes we find somebody, but then that falls apart. So I'd hate to be premature.
I appreciate that, because as much as we're in a rush and I'm like, we need a Freedom Caucus here, we need to do it, but you got to do it right, because otherwise you run the risk of every other failed organization, which is that it just gets rolled up into, I want to be part of the conservative caucus, and it gets rolled into the uniparty. Describe how you've been able to basically take this to the next level, that, everyone was a 1980 Reagan revolution. Everyone was a 94 revolution. Everyone was a Tea Party. Everyone's MAGA now, right? Because it's just, that's the flavor of the Republican Party tenor at that moment. How are you able to drive the wedge that basically solving the longstanding problem that we need a new party? We know we need a new party because the Republican Party is broken from head to toe. But, you know, you have the institutional issues, the ballot access issues. So to solve that, but basically operate that, we are going to hold you accountable with the same energy we do Democrats. You are not on our team. We're going to do ours. I watch your social media, like South Carolina Freedom Caucus, Missouri Freedom Caucus, Wyoming Freedom Caucus. How do you guys do that? How do you get people that are willing to go to war with the party?
Yeah, I mean, they are out there. You know, some states there's several conservative lawmakers. In other states, there's actually zero. but then other times there's one or two. It just starts with us having conversations with them. And you're right about how we have to get it right. We believe strongly in the brand. I ruthlessly protect it. And we got to make sure that the people who we're going to kind of jump off the cliff with, they have to be committed to it, and they have to be principled and honorable and conservative, because there are millions of conservatives in this country right now who are just dying for some leadership in the state capitals. And so if we can put all those pieces together, which I think we have successfully so far, then they're unstoppable. And it's a slow process, but once we get it, we make sure we get it right, and then we're off to the races.
So how did you avoid some of the problems that were a little bit endemic at the federal level in Congress with the House Freedom Caucus that, you know, again, there's a lot of drama. I see a lot of personality clashes, a lot of divisions. To me, when I look at your successful states, I see unity. And I see one of the beautiful things is everything nowadays revolves around an ephemeral cause, meme, or personality. And the beauty is, I mean, I know these people, but most people can't name a single person. Like, there's not any one person. It's not like everyone's like, nothing personal, Andy, but, oh, Andy Roth, like, you know, he's everywhere. Or, you know, Adam Morgan, or, you know, Tammy Nichols, or, you know, she's in Idaho, or whatever. It's just sort of, it's the cause. It's, we know the top 5-7 issues we're dealing with. I'm seeing a lot of discipline. And the question is, how do you avoid the inevitable politics in politics?
Yeah, I'd like to think that we're a big part of that discipline. But truthfully, most of it is because state districts, state house districts and state senate districts are smaller than congressional districts or entire states. And so you don't have all of the various equities pulling at you, because in Congress, you know, you've got so many people pulling you in so many different directions that it just it becomes overwhelming. We're able to focus a lot more on strategy, on unity, on just discipline, everything, because the size is smaller. And if you can get a Freedom Caucus like we do in a state, and you get those people who trust each other like brothers and sisters, and they fight in the trenches together, that becomes encouraging to them and appealing to them, to the point where they're like, wow, we just won this fight. Let's go do it again. Or, wow, we just lost this fight, but we exposed the rhinos. Let's do it again. And so it's a snowball going down the hill that just gets bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger.
So looking back on this legislative session, we're towards the end. A lot of states already are out of session. What are some of the trends you're picking up on? Some of the changes you're starting to see in the states where you're operating, some potential, some positive trends, some challenges. What's your overall view of 2024 legislative sessions?
Well, so I would even expand that because, you know, when we set these Freedom Caucuses up or help set them up, our mantra was, let's take part-time lawmakers and help them turn it into a full-time Freedom Caucus. So the in-session work is very vital. I mean, we passed constitutional carry in Louisiana and South Carolina. We passed a transgender ban in South Carolina. We did some massive budget reforms in Idaho, the likes of which hasn't been done in decades. And in Missouri, they're forcing the establishment's feet to the fire on school choice and a few other issues. So all that in-session stuff is important. But what is just absolutely blowing my mind at the success we have is a lot of the out-of-session stuff, or even when they're in session, but they're doing things outside of the chambers. It's like the Wyoming Freedom Caucus endorsed a student at the University of Wyoming who's running for student body president. Wow. Now, you might think, oh, that's cute. That's an interesting thing. But the Wyoming Freedom Caucus defunded DEI in the state budget, but the governor vetoed it. So this student body candidate is running on a platform to get rid of all that stuff, or to oppose all that stuff and all the woke nonsense that's on our college campuses today. So even if we lose in session, we have other levers to pull where our folks can advance good conservative policy. And that's just one example. I mean, our South Carolina Freedom Caucus shut down a transgender clinic. Our Illinois Freedom Caucus shut down an abortion clinic. Wyoming, back to them, they forced their Department of Corrections to change their guidelines so that biological men can't be in the female prisons. Like, all of that stuff was done out of session. And there is so much work. I know you can imagine this, and your listeners too, of holding these agencies accountable, these woke state agencies accountable. And you don't have to be in session when that happens. So
yep.
That's an innovation that I didn't fully appreciate when we started this, is that we are now a full-time 365 days out of the year focus, and we attack every target we can find.
No, I mean, you guys are solving the longstanding problem of the asymmetry of power at a state level between the legislature and the executive branch. It's even greater than the asymmetry between Congress and the federal executive branch, because they're part-time, they have few staff, they don't have the institutional knowledge. We really, really saw this in COVID, that we got crushed. They did this all at a state level, and it was in March when most chambers were in session. And a lot of them knew it was wrong, but they didn't feel like they had the intellectual firepower and the information to fight back against the lab coats at the Department of Health. And now I think what we have is, okay, you know, we might not have official paid staff through the taxpayer, or we might not be able to hold committee hearings after April or whatever, but heck, who needs a committee? You have your own brand now as the institution of the Freedom Caucus, campaigning, going around the state, highlighting, wait a minute, we're a red state, but our Department of Health is pushing drag shows. What's up with that? And that's how you get this stuff shut down, exposing the people. But again, you got to be willing to start off with a mindset that it's not like, oh, thank God we have a Republican state, not a Democrat state. Maybe we tweak it. No. It may as well be a Democrat state. That we do not have the ball in the end zone, because you're not going to get it in there if you lie to yourself. No, these guys are total leftists. I mean, that Wyoming governor shocks me. I mean, even I'm shocked by him every day how far left he moves. But there's an interesting dynamic that flows when you start doing this, and I want you to talk about what I call the peeing in their punch bowl sort of dynamic, where they had this nice, you know, table set where They fake certain conservative imagery to kind of just keep winning, but then get in there and just perpetuate red states as nothing more than just maybe, you know, pro-gun versions of blue states. And now our guys are really not making it very enjoyable for them anymore. Discuss that sort of dynamic.
Well, if you think about it, and I say this a lot, the establishment at the state level largely operates in the dark, and that's how they like it. I mean, the media doesn't pay a lot of attention. Everything's focused on DC, inflation, war on Ukraine, all that stuff, FISA. Every time you turn on your TV, that's what you see. Every time you turn on your computer, that's what you see. And that is the perfect environment for really bad stuff to happen. And that's what's been happening at the state level for years and years, decades and decades. And I really do think that what we're doing is finally exposing that. And every single Republican primary voter, or darn near every one of them, is on our side. And when you just give them a glimpse of what's going on, then you've got them. They are on your side and they will fight with you. And so that's what we're doing. And the establishment is freaking out. They literally do not know how to handle this, because, like you said, we're peeing in their punch bowl and they don't know what to do. And so they've retaliated in the most predictable way. They kick our folks off of committees, which don't really matter anyways.
They don't do anything.
They take away, they take away parking spots. They dock staff pay. They do all sorts of petty stuff. And in Missouri, they even threatened to take away their furniture. And then if they go real nuclear, if they go real nuclear, like they did in South Carolina, they just kick the Freedom Caucus members out of the Republican caucus. And they thought that would solve the problem. But our South Carolina Freedom Caucus guys said, that's fine with us. We didn't want to go to your meetings anyway. And then they tried to use the rules of the chamber, like in South Carolina, to shut down Freedom Caucus amendments. And then they tried to expel our members. They threatened to do that in Missouri. Like, they are trying every tactic that's in the establishment playbook to try and beat our guys down. But every single time they do it, it just energizes our guys and it energizes the base. And so we just get bigger and bigger and stronger.
Because at the end of the day, and this cuts to your first point that, gosh, we should have done this a lot earlier, because I've said this all the time, there is no constituency for, you know, David French. Like, you know, some of these people, they don't exist in the real world. You know, some of these, like, Republican-oriented or, you know, writers or whatever, some of these publications. I mean, maybe you have a small constituency in certain counties, but not really. I mean, you either buy into what the left is doing, or if you don't, you're so appalled, you want action, you want it dealt with. So if we only went into the states where a majority of people think like us, yes, they have the Tysons and the Walmarts and the donor, they have, it's true, and that's why they have a lot of political power. But at the end of the day, if the public only knew what they were doing, they're not going to side with them over us, which is why they have to either lie, play games, or sometimes, like you had some successes in South Carolina, where they will agree to pass our thing. So I'm also finding a lot of them are getting very fatigued and they don't want it anymore. Could you talk about some retirements that are taking place?
Yeah, but real quick, to your point, one other punishment they try is to go after you electorally. In fact, we're going to see that on full display this year. And so in Illinois, our Illinois Freedom Caucus folks are strongly pro-school choice. They called on the state GOP to disavow any Republican state lawmaker who takes teachers' union money, because 70% of Republican state lawmakers in Illinois take teachers' union money. And so naturally, the establishment decided to try and defeat a couple of our guys. And so the teachers' union poured over $700,000 in two of our state house districts to try and defeat our guys. And our guys won 80-20 and 90-10. I've never seen money light on fire that quickly. It was an absolute joy to see the teachers union waste that money. But that's the other thing. And so, you know, I just think that we just keep attacking them, keep going after them. And I think that the saying is, first they ignore you, then they fight you, and then they try to work with you. And our states are in various stages right now. South Carolina is probably in the last stage, which is they hate the Freedom Caucus. They tried to ignore them. Then they fought with them. They're still fighting with them. But every once in a while, they'll say, okay, we'll pass your transgender ban on kids, which is ridiculous that we had to
fight for that.
It took so long for that to happen. But they passed constitutional carry. They passed a couple of other things. So we just got to get through that stage, through those stages in our various states. And then ultimately, when we succeed electorally, like in Wyoming, we have 16 members of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, but we need 31 in order to take over the House chamber. And we've already got another 10 who aren't Freedom Caucus members, but are generally conservative.
Sure.
So they're already up to 26. So all they need is five more seats in order to literally change the dynamics in Wyoming. And to your point, we just found out a couple of days ago that the Wyoming House Speaker, full-blown liberal Republican rhino, he announced his retirement along with three other folks. So the opportunity is ripe in that state for us to take over. And I anticipate that sort of thing is going to happen in every one of our states. Some will take a little bit more time than others, but it's inevitable because we just can't be stopped.
No, and I saw that Albert Summers, we've talked about him a lot, pure leftist, literally Republican in name only. He doesn't enjoy it anymore. They made it unenjoyable, so he's gone. We also saw this in Missouri, where the Senate president, you know, I couldn't believe it. He was running for Secretary of State against another sitting Freedom Caucus member, Denny Hoskins, who's running for Secretary of State, and then suddenly, you know, announces he's quitting politics, quits the legislature, aborts his Secretary of State run. What's up with that?
Yeah, and then in Louisiana, we started with just 9 members last year. But Louisiana is one of those goofy states that has off-year elections. Our Louisiana Freedom Caucus endorsed a ton of people, and now they've gone from 9 members to 26 members. And to your point, Caleb Rowden, the guy you're talking about in Missouri, I mean, he is, for all intents and purposes, a Democrat. But because they've been operating in the dark for so long, he's gotten away with that. But in just a few short weeks of existence, because the Missouri Freedom Caucus just launched on January 5th, they've totally changed the dynamic. And you're right. He took his ball and he went home. And so we don't have to worry about him anymore. But there's more of them. There's tons of them all across the country. And we just have to expose them.
I mean, this is what keeps me up overnight. The amount of, like, could you imagine, Andy, if you would have done this 20 years ago, and nothing personal to your work, you know, trying to fix Congress for many years, but 20 years ago, we would be a different country, and I would argue it would have been such a check and balance on the behavior of the left in the other states and federally, they wouldn't have even embarked on a lot of this, because when you look at a dynamic in Wyoming, you know, where you have, what is it, you know, something like 57-5 Republican majority. And we laugh out of it because it's not. But here's what it does represent. Roughly, the people want our view to that degree. I mean, maybe you could quibble a couple seats in the margins. Maybe, okay, if we had maybe one of our guys versus a Dem, maybe a Dem could win. But the point is, whatever that number is, we would have super majorities of people that share our values. We're just not utilizing the map. And we've ignored this forever. We forget that, you know, everyone's like, oh, okay, how many seats are going to win the House? A Senate, president. Like, well, what about these supermajority trifectas where Democrats can never win? You know, why aren't you working that? So looking for,
you said 20 years ago, I wish we had it. Just give me, you know,
pre-COVID.
4 or 5 years ago, because of COVID, we could have totally changed the entire national conversation if we had our state legislatures more in line with the how we think.
And that was the biggest international issue of international of all time. Yet, as we vividly remember, that was driven almost exclusively state and county. I mean, what directly affected your lives.
That's why the states are so important, is because people think that the issues that matter to them most are federal issues, because that's all they see on TV or on the internet. But all of the big issues are at the state level, whether it's school choice or porn in the classroom. The things that directly affect you and your family, it happens at the state level. And it's just unfortunate that not enough people are paying attention, but we're changing that, and people are starting to pay attention.
And that's the thing. There is an institution to work with. There's something to work with. You know, I know I have some conversations with people you probably know in states that you don't yet have a Freedom Caucus. I'm like, hey, you know, are you guys working on it? And once in a while, I'll get these crusty types, and you know who they are, where, you know, with being anti-establishment, you're fiercely independent. And a lot of them are like, well, Daniel, I don't know, but I wouldn't join it anyway. What would you say to people like that? And there's a certain type that's like that, that they're like, look, no, thank you. I'm good. You know, why they need to be a part of this?
There's two kinds of folks like that, right? There are sort of the really strong conservatives who just don't like being part of a caucus. Like Thomas Massie is a great example of that. The other type, though, is not necessarily a full-blown rhino, but somebody who's just not in it for the right reasons.
Exactly.
And frankly, we don't try to talk to them. We don't try to change their mind. What we do want, though, is for the grassroots, the voters, to constantly bother them saying, why aren't you in a Freedom Caucus? Why haven't you set one up?
Yep.
Because if you're not going to, I'm not sure I can vote for you again. That's what we want.
Because as far as the Thomas Massie types, and this is not a criticism of Thomas, because I do think Congress is a different dynamic. But in the legislature, I'm not going to, you know, publicize the conversation. You probably know who this individual is. I won't say if it's a male or a female. But this person is terrific. I mean, you will never get a bad vote out of them. But the problem is that I just felt like saying, look, you know, that's great. You could continue voting no and being the lone no vote or whatever forever, but we're not doing anything. Show me any success we're having outside the Freedom Caucuses, and I'm not really seeing that, because you need the force multiplication of a brand that's almost like a party. It's not, you could protect yourself and not get taken in by bad stuff alone, but that's not going to change things and convert people and win on the issues. So looking forward, before I let you go, just where you're headed, what I find is that you get what you fight for. Okay, commensurate with how much you put in is what you get. And it's very comforting. We have a movement behind guns. It shows the last 3 decades in the States. We have a movement behind school choice. We used to have a movement behind abortion until recently. And that definitely showed. I would say the tranny issues are kind of in between. We're getting there, and you're seeing a lot of success there. We have a movement behind Trump as a person, and you certainly see robust support for him. You get what you fight for. But when it comes to, you know, pushing back against FBI weaponization, illegal immigration, trimming federal, you know, state budgets, currency issues, medical freedom, you know, there is where we're getting things introduced, but, you know, it's just not critical mass. Do you guys have an effort to, you know, each state's different, but to try to synchronize certain universal problems we're having in society and government? You know, some of it's coming from the Fed, some of it's endemic in all the states, that you could hit the ground running for the next sessions? Because a lot of these states, they give you 3 minutes to introduce bills, and we just don't have our stuff together.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the benefits of having our network, is that we have a state director in all 11 of our states, and they constantly share notes with each other. So if somebody has a bill that will go after the World Health Organization, then they share it with the other states. If they have a currency bill, they share it with the other states. And we're slowly developing, I wouldn't even say slowly, we're quickly developing sort of a catalog of bills that we try to introduce in all the states. And what's great is that non-Freedom Caucus members see our success. They may not want to join, but they're like, oh, you're introducing a World Health Organization bill to ignore all their guidelines. I think I want to be a part of that because I'm hearing about that. And so they are able to attract attention from their non-Freedom Caucus members, maybe not the full-blown rhinos, but a lot of the other rank-and-file folks. And that's how you win, is you just cobble together a winning coalition,
yes,
and then you pass the bills, and then you win.
Amen. And
that's
why—
simple.
Rather than scattershot, just focusing on the GOP as a whole, which is just a toilet bowl, you know, we talk about a big tent. You could have a tent like you're describing, but you need stakes in the ground. You need a core. And that's why, like, I tell people every time, I don't look at a legislative body, whether it's Congress, oh, do we have 218? Do you have 51 senators? It's, you know, are we at 5, 10, 20? What are the number of stakes in the ground? Because believe it or not, in short order, if you get enough of them, you'll get a majority on plenty of issues. But if you don't have that, you just have nothing and it just collapses inward. And that's why you need a core. You need to build that core. Of course, you guys are doing it, statefreedomcaucus.org. Where else could people find out, you know, follow your work in their respective states?
Yeah, you mentioned it before. My Twitter handle is @AndyRoth. All of our states are active on Twitter. So just find them. It's usually just the two initials of the state and then Freedom Caucus. So like Missouri is MO Freedom Caucus on Twitter. Also, a lot of our states have Substack newsletters. If you go to statefreedomcaucus.org, you can sign up for ours, and then you'll be able to quickly find theirs. That's the two things that I would really encourage your listeners to do is get on our newsletter, follow us on Twitter, and hopefully if you like what you see, you can eventually donate to our cause and support our efforts.
Awesome stuff. Folks, you have heard and you are warned. There is a movement. Don't tell me there isn't. Don't tell me it has to be this way, because it doesn't have to be this way, at least not in significant portions of this country, affecting pretty much every issue except for foreign policy. It doesn't have to be this way. We have a movement. Share this. Thank you, Andy. Thank you all. We'll see you guys back same time, same place tomorrow.